Listening to Terror on Tequila.
You're listening to WTOT Terror on Tequila. And, oh my God, we have a totally awesome show for you today.
The bitchin'.
I am Jason Lucas, your barkeep of chaos, joined once again by
Dave Fuentes. Please follow my Rondo Award-winning blog, Terror from Beyond the Daves, along with the other Terror Dave, David Alba, by visiting terrordaves.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Terror Daves and like us on Facebook.
And we like the 1980s.
Yes, we do, Jason. And while our teenage years were mostly known for its slasher films, this wasn't the only horror genre to thrive like a chia pet during the big 80s.
Yes, it was a prolific period for horror movies in general and included some time-honored classics such as An American Werewolf in London, The Howling, John Carpenter's The Thing, Aliens, and Fright Night, to name but a few. Many of these films were not only fun to watch then, but even more entertaining now as we laugh at the dated styles and lingo that proved that anything worth doing in the 1980s was worth overdoing.
And it wasn't just the big hair and excessive accessorizing that defy the laws of nature. Join us today as we delve into some supernatural titles guaranteed to send chills more effectively than Food for Africa as we cover three spectral spectacles. From 1986, we have Dramaniac as well as Witchboard. Then we move on to 1988's Night of the Demons. And helping us through these spirited stories will be some actual spirits, courtesy of Jason.
That's right, Dave. We're going to get into the groove tonight with some Madonna martinis, while also gobbling up some of my infamous neon new wave Jell-O jigglers, like an anti-prohibitionist Pac-Man. And here's your Madonna-tini, Dave, which has enough alcohol in it to make it anything but like a virgin.
Well, y'all must be my lucky star.
Cheers, bro.
Cheers.
To comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable, it's Mega Big Hair and Mega Big Scares on Terror on Tequila.
We'll be starting off our night of 80s fun with a rather obscure title called Dreamaniac. This film was released in 1986 and features a plethora of unknowns whose acting careers mysteriously never kicked off after this film. Jason, tell our listeners a bit about it.
Well, Dave, if you're looking for an 82-minute 1980s time capsule, this bogus movie is right up your alley. A frat boy takes time out of his busy schedule of banging his girlfriend, getting high, and watching Godzilla movies to conjure up the demon of his dreams. That's right. Not only is her fashion sense straight out of hell, but so is she. Providing her ample supplies of victims, there is a big 80s bash planned at the frat house, full of sex, drugs, but no rock and roll, as each of the partygoers falls victim to the demon's voracious, violent, and sexual appetites. Suffering succubus, it's Terror on Tequila.
Okay, so we're going to kick off our big 80s supernatural party with a movie that features a big 80s party. This is in the film Dreamaniac, and in case you missed it, that would be the words dream and maniac welded together.
Totally.
And this film was made in 1986, so we're knee-deep in the 80s.
Yeah, oh yeah.
As evidenced by this film. And it features, and actually it starts out with a wet dream, doesn't it?
Yeah. We've got a college-age kid. He's all decked out in his Def Leppard t-shirt, and he's rocking and rolling. He's hanging out in this huge rented dorm so he can write his heavy metal masterpiece, complete with acoustic guitar.
Yeah, so he can churn out the ballads, which of course were big at that time.
Yeah.
But the movie does start out with a wet dream, which is indicative of the fact that even though he has a beautiful girlfriend with hoop earrings big enough to hang someone, he yearns for a demon lover. So the movie actually begins with him walking around the house naked, complete with the 1980s smoke machine.
Right.
And finding this quote-unquote beautiful demon, blood-soaked in the bathroom and bathtub, actually.
Yeah.
And she actually kind of looks like a blood-soaked Bananarama. I don't know how else to describe an 80s demon. How would you describe the look of this 80s demon?
Well, she's hideous, which is important. But he's walking around naked in his dream, goes into the shower, and here's this chick all bloodied up, and she's pretty hideous. And then all of a sudden he like wakes up, and he's greeted at the door by his real girlfriend, who is really not that bad.
No, not at all.
Compared to his dream demon.
Right. Now, when I have dreams like that, I'm actually at Walmart. But
yeah, right.
He was
this
at,
is.
Yeah, but he was he's at the frat house that he is actually house sitting or being paid to watch a frat house. I don't know how you get a job like that. Is that a viable occupation?
It's a huge house. Yeah, he's like hanging out in the middle of it, like cross-legged, sitting on his bed, jamming out, smoking weed, watching like old Godzilla movies, and conjuring up demonesses.
Yes, and as it turns out, he does end up conjuring this demon and. She materializes,
yes.
And then gets the perfect opportunity to extol her supernatural vengeance, because he's actually hosting a big 80s party.
Yeah,
at his house. How would you describe the party?
Well, it's a bunch of mismatched folks that don't seem to like each other, guys and girls,
who did
couples.
The guest list here.
I know. It's like all these girls seem to show up and know who he is, and they're like, "Oh my god, we can't wait for this party!" So they're baking hash brownies, of course, and all these crappy cookies,
yeah.
And that's what they're getting ready to serve up at this party, and you don't know who's going to show up, but there's knocks at the door, and people start coming in.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal spread with carrots and celery sticks, Salerno cookies.
Salerno
course,
cookies.
Of course, the hash brownies, which coupled with the incredibly bad lighting, really is a great way to sedate your guests.
Yeah, right.
And but as it turns out, it doesn't do much of a job for sedating these guests, because they're all hot to twat and ready to go, and you know, it just goes from there. And the music, of course, for a heavy metal person, is that the kind of music you'd be playing at your parties?
Well, I'll tell you, they're jamming all these records, and there's no heavy metal at all, except the fact that he's got the place adorned with old Hip Parader pinups of Judas Priest, Kiss, like 80s era Kiss, all this stuff, Def Leppard, Ozzy. He's got all this stuff all decked out all over the house in a gaudy way, and the house is huge, but he's inviting over these, mostly there's like girls and then a few dumb guys that show up, and I think these people are supposed to be liking to hang out with each other.
I didn't pick up on that from this movie. I kind of got that they can't fucking stand each other.
Yeah, I mean, who was the director of this movie?
That would be the famous David DiCicco. I'm sure you've all heard of him.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
Yes, he and the other cast members and crew members really went on to...
What was her name? Cynthia Crass?
Yeah, Cynthia Crass, who, and by the way, Crass is the operative word, as she is, for lack of better words, a contemptible whore.
Yeah.
Yeah, wearing an Angora hefty bag.
Yeah.
And basically just walking around the party, and if she's not trying to sleep with you, she's cutting you down.
Yeah, she shows up like by herself and is like, "Oh my god, I can't believe like what you're wearing, and oh, your boyfriend's dick is so little." It's all this stuff like that, and then she proceeds to like try to sleep with all of them.
Right, including the one with the little dick, who she sleeps with twice in 5 minutes, because he's not only small, he's quick.
He's very quick.
He's very quick.
And she's like counting down on her little swatch, you know, what's going on there. But yeah, it's just like a bunch of people that really don't like each other, and the main character, this guy who's dreaming about this demon, he's unlikable as well.
And was he even at this party?
No, he was like hanging out
hanging
getting stoned by himself.
Yeah, up in his room.
Yeah, trying to write his metal masterpiece.
Yes, while not actually touching a pen and putting it to paper.
Yeah.
So he's a real ambitious writer.
Well, so the girls are basically setting out this spread of food.
Yeah, it's his girlfriend and her sister that put together this fabulous party.
Yeah, yeah. And they're ready to go, except for, like, the music sucks, the food is sparse. The drinks, they're, like, drinking straight out of the bottle. You've got people drinking champagne, wine, cheap beer.
Tequila. Straight from the
vodka,
bottle.
Walking out. Yeah, right from the bottle. And they start, like, hanging out and trying to play games and do all this stupid stuff.
Yeah.
The dialogue is hideous.
It's absolutely horrible.
Total 80s.
Very 80s, and that's where you get wonderful lines like this.
Sorry to interrupt, kissy face, but, like, where's the phone?
Oh, there isn't one.
Like, that's a joke, right? I mean, what if I have to call my broker?
Well, I'm sorry.
Mondo, bad planning, Jody. Jeez.
And that was probably one of the best exchanges in the entire movie, because pretty much nobody was talking to each other the rest of the night.
Right.
That was definitely, this is a giant 80s timepiece.
Yes.
It's almost like a parody of the 1980s, if not for the fact that it was actually made in the 80s.
Yes.
Indicative of the clothes, of course. And also the fact that, I mean, we do see, like we brought up Cynthia Crass. I mean, how can we not bring her up at least twice?
Right.
But, you know, she and a couple other partygoers, including the ones we just heard from, are really rich bitches, is pretty much how it is. And there's a lot of snobbery and cocaine use.
Like, what sorority are you in?
Yeah, all big indicators of the me decade.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, the 1980s. Just
at one point, they're like passing around what looks like an Etch-a-Sketch to do coke off of.
Yeah.
Rolling up dollar bills. And it's like, what is this little red, you know, they've just got like this little Etch-a-Sketch. And like, again, these people are like gathering together at this boring party doing coke. You'd think there'd be a lot more going
on.
But
I mean, seriously, how else could you follow up that rip-roaring game of charades that was going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's so funny because like in the middle of this party, the two sisters kind of meet up in the kitchen and the one sister goes, oh, this party's actually better than I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, bitch, what did you think this party was going to be?
Right.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally a horrific party. However, spaced out in between the boredom, there are some killings. And this movie does have some pretty decent death scenes. What did you think about that?
It does. And for a dream supernatural type theme, there's really a lot of knifings going on in this movie.
Yeah, there's no real supernatural death. You're right. It's all like, you know.
Well, he conjures up this demon chick who shows up at the party later on with this guy named Ace on a motorcycle. He just shows up. He's like, oh, totally, I'm going to be here at this party. And here I brought her.
The Ace of Gay Clubs.
Yeah, the Ace of Gay Clubs.
Because he was definitely not straight.
Well, the guys are totally decked out in their Cavariccis and their little spiky haircuts and stuff. And the chicks are totally 80s out. But, yeah, he shows up with the demon of this guy's dreams. And she proceeds to, like, cause havoc at the party.
Yeah, and there's some really, actually some pretty good death scenes. And, of course, since we're in the 80s, we are dealing with old school gore.
Yeah.
You know, we had the whole punch bowl scene.
No, I like that one.
Yeah. And there's also the ski pole in the eyeball.
Yeah, yeah. When they do some gore, they try. I mean, it's 80s gore, so you've got, it's no computerized anything. It's totally rubber mask crap, blood everywhere. But the blood is actually pretty decent. I mean, there's a decent amount of it.
Yeah, and they, especially the part where they're drilling the guy's head off.
That's funny.
Yeah, there's actually some pretty decent gore for this kind of an obscure movie.
This drunk chick has like a drill, a long-ass drill, and she's like, that's what she's going to use to cut off somebody's head is a drill? Imagine that.
Right.
But she does a good job.
She sure does. Now, of course, we also have some lame scenes, like when our girl, Cynthia Crass, gets suffocated by a pillow, and it takes, the pillow's over her mouth for a grand total of like three and a half seconds, and she's dead. And the only explanation I can possibly offer is that she was already drowning in her sweater, and that was just the coup de grace.
No, yeah.
Yeah, but for the most part, I would say, now, I didn't hear about this movie back in the day. You heard about it when? Tell me about it, because you're the one that brought this up to me.
This was a movie that I've been looking for a while. I saw the trailer at the beginning of a DVD we rented one time about 10 years ago. And it was for this movie, Dream Maniac, and we were just laughing at not only the 80s styles, the dialogue that they featured in the trailer, but we thought it could be pretty cool to review because it just seemed totally trifling in an 80s way that we would love. And sure enough, we were very pleased when we finally got a copy. The copy itself is not that good. It's a bad transfer on DVD.
It's really, really bad. And that's the thing. If you order this DVD from Amazon, be prepared for a really shitty VHS to DVD transfer. In fact, when you put the DVD on, it actually comes up with like an explanation. Like, we know, it basically says, we know the quality's bad, but this was the 80s. And it's like, fuck you, you did a shitty job.
Isn't there a better version of this on Netflix?
Exactly.
Streaming?
Go streamline it on Netflix. It's currently available that way, and it's way better quality than if you actually buy the DVD. That's which is pretty sad, but that is the truth. It was terrible what we saw.
Well, the music, the soundtrack to it is totally 80s, keyboard up the ass. And it's supposed to be this guy who's into heavy metal. There's no heavy metal in the whole movie. It's just all this crap. They're like, oh, don't you love this music I'm playing? And the girl's like, whatever.
I'm glad you brought up the music, too, because we did actually hear a sampling of that before we got on here. And it's very similar to the other two movies we'll be highlighting. And Jason took the time to give us little samplings of each one before we do our commentary, so you can see just how similar they are.
Yeah, it's totally 80s, totally. Synth. Everything, and again, the 80s, the styles, the lack of any sort of technology in the house, just having the old school telephones, old school everything. People hanging out at a party, they don't know what to do, so they're just fucking for no reason. People that don't even like
bored.
Each other. They're bored.
We're bored. Let's just do it. What okay? a crappy... Something's got to get us through this party.
But these chicks are just rude to each other. The guys don't seem to pay attention to each other because the chicks are so obnoxious. And the food is nothing to speak of except the hash brownies, which didn't seem to do anything to make anybody mellow out.
No, it really didn't.
No. They had to have Coke in them.
They had to, yeah. It was
well, they were doing Coke. Imagine that, Coke and hash brownies. What are you going to do?
Right, you come down, you come up, you come down, you come up. But, you know, yeah. The party gets a thumbs down. But the movie itself, we're going to give a, well, how would you rate this movie, Jason?
Straight up tequila out of the bottle.
Let's take a tip from the party planners themselves who sat in the kitchen guzzling a bottle of tequila straight up. That is exactly what we're going to rate this movie.
Something else that's a little odd about this movie compared to the other 80s films, a lot of 80s films are known for gratuitous female nudity.
Oh, yeah.
This movie has tons of male back angle nudity.
Yeah, you got a lot of butts. Bare butts from the guys, except for in the beginning when we get the saggy boobs of the demon, which we really didn't need to see.
No. Yeah. But this movie is one that you should see, and we have really enjoyed it. This is a true Terror on Tequila classic. Dream Maniac is the one for you. If you like the 80s, you like gore, there's a little bit of gore in there to make you, you know, keep you interested. The dialogue and everything else is pretty funny, whether you're drinking or you're sober. I think this one's a thumbs up for Terror on Tequila. What do you think, Dave?
I think the same thing, and we're going to now move on to the next movie, so let's have a hash brownie and enjoy Terror on Tequila.
Continuing on with our big supernatural 80s show, we're grabbing our planchettes firmly at the base while navigating yet another incoherent incantation. 1986's Witchboard. Terror Dave and I are channeling our own Ouija board to give you an idea what it's all about.
I swear, Jason, I didn't move that. Well, you're sure to be moved by this film, which features a pre-train wreck Tawny Katahan caught in the middle of a love triangle turned sensitive male bonding story in Witchboard. Yes, her character Linda is dating Jim, who used to be best friends with Brandon, a.k.a. Linda's ex, but still very much in love with her boyfriend. Now, Jim can't stand Brandon, who makes matters even worse by introducing Linda to the spirit of his deceased 10-year-old buddy David via his Ouija board. Soon, Linda becomes enmeshed with the board, while folks start dying left and right, despite the best efforts of Jim and Brandon to get her to just say no. Are they being menaced by the original Terror Dave? Or has Linda summoned something even more sinister?
We'll find out. It's Terror on Tequila. Hey, everybody. We are watching Witchboard, 1986's Paranormal Activity classic. And we hope that you will enjoy it with us.
Yes, and just like the last film that we watched, this one also features a 1980s party. This one, fortunately, more well-lit, though not necessarily more entertaining. However, these folks actually know how to kick things up by bringing in their own Ouija board, where they proceed to contact the dead.
Yeah, they got a little party going on. Beginning of the movie starts with some folks hanging out in this huge mansion and playing a Ouija board, which begins to cause some problems for the main characters.
Yes, and that huge mansion actually was the same house featured in another 80s classic, Waxwork, and is also features an apartment for the two lead characters, which is Jim and Linda, who live together, and although Jim is pretty much an active alcoholic, and they host themselves this big party because, unlike, you know, Jim's a construction worker, though Linda is a college girl, and she invites a whole bunch of her friends, including her ex-boyfriend, Brandon, who also happens to be the ex-best friend of Jim, who comes over and basically also brings over his favorite board game. No, I'm not talking about Monopoly.
Yeah.
It's a Ouija board.
And Brandon's a big lawyer, big wealthy guy.
From the Sinclair Vineyards.
Yeah, and Jim is a former med student who ends up being a construction worker because he, like, bailed out of school. And so this girl is caught between the two of them. This Ouija board is the connector. And the Ouija board conjures up a spirit named David, of all things.
Yes, can you believe that? What's with these terror days? Yeah, the basically
the true terror Dave.
The true terror Dave. Well, that's not necessarily true because we don't know if he's really the problem in this movie. Although in the beginning they do contact David, this 10-year-old boy that died before his time. And Linda ends up, the Ouija board ends up staying at the house, and Linda does what she's told she should never do, which is use a Ouija board by herself. And of course she does, and at first the spirit is very helpful, helping her find things and all kinds of advice. And then it isn't long before Linda becomes basically enmeshed with the board and starts using it all the time. And as that enmeshment grows, she becomes more and more tortured. And much to the dismay of her detached and alcoholic, emotionally dead boyfriend, Jim, who really doesn't have time for her and her, you know, hocus pocus. So Jim actually becomes alarmed about the whole thing with Linda because she's starting to do, what is she doing, Jason? Swearing, isn't she? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, my God, I've never heard you swear like it before. And that's obviously swearing is one of the criteria for possession.
Right. So if you know somebody that swears, then oh my God, they could be possessed. Isn't that really the
totally
moral of the story?
Like, oh, is she swearing? Is she like having nausea? Oh, she's totally possessed. That's a sign.
Yes. And Linda basically is indeed swearing and starting all kinds of other weird behavior like having horrible nightmares. And it isn't long then when before the people around them start dying, mostly around Jim at the construction site.
Yeah, right.
And he gets cornered by, he immediately, because people are dying around him, he starts being investigated by probably the most annoying character of this film, the investigator who constantly starts every conversation with, "Do you like magic tricks?" And it's really irritating.
Yeah, right. You ever been to Vegas?
Yeah, it's very irritating. But one character that we absolutely love is played by Kathleen Wilhoit, and that would be Zara Beth.
Zara Beth the medium.
Zara Beth the medium, a.k.a. Sarah Crawford, is probably one of my all-time favorite characters in a 1980s film, and definitely my favorite in this one. And they basically call her in to find out, you know, to basically exorcise the Terror David from the house to help Linda get over this whole thing. So she comes in, and she plays a pretty interesting part, and definitely this whole movie, I think, is actually very entertaining. And I have to say that of all the supernatural thrillers, I'm going to like rank this one as probably my favorite. I remember seeing it back in the day, and I have liked it ever since.
Yeah, this is one of the first we ever saw together, Dave.
That's right, I remember. I think that's kind of a criteria. Whenever I become friends with somebody, I make them watch Witchboard. And so it wasn't too surprising that this is probably one of the few movies where I really kind of introduced you to. But this one, I remember hearing it came on cable TV, or maybe my mom rented it, I don't remember. But I was in the other room doing something when I heard the dialogue in the opening sequence, and it immediately wrapped me up. And I came right out to watch it. And if I come out to actually spend time with my mother and my brother and sister, you know it has to be good. So this movie was fantastic. And what I like about it particularly was that really, even though you have this kind of a love triangle thing going on with Tawny Katayan, we'll talk about her in a little bit, with Linda and Jim and Brandon, the real relationship story is between the two men. It's actually between Jim and Brandon, who, of course, were best friends and childhood chums and had a falling out that Linda actually had nothing to do with. So it's not like, you know, the deal breaker where the best friend steals the girlfriend. It wasn't like that. Linda came into the other person's life afterwards. But what I like about this movie is it did add that whole aspect that the real relationship really didn't have anything to do with the female. It was really about the two men and their friendship. And I thought that was kind of an interesting psychological component you don't usually see in these kind of movies.
I love the progressive entrapment angle to this movie. You don't usually hear that in a movie, but they came up with that one for this one. And that she's being progressively drawn into the entrapment of the demon through this Ouija board that she keeps communicating with and that is wreaking havoc throughout her life through the folks that she's intertwined with, namely the two men, Jim and Brandon.
Yeah, so there's definitely stages to possession. It doesn't just happen. It actually
you got to start from the swearing.
It starts with swearing. Yes. So just remember that the next time somebody swears at you, they could actually be in the first stage of possession. So
yeah.
Please
keep
that in mind.
Or they could be pregnant.
Or they could be pregnant. That is another angle that comes out in this movie. So you're either pregnant or you're possessed.
Women that are
sure
swearing, could be pregnant, guys. Know that. Women that are swearing could be pregnant or possessed. It's one or the other.
Well, in this case, the possessee in question would be Linda, a.k.a. played by Tawny Katan.
Yay.
Who, of course, most people in the 80s, even if you're not familiar with horror, certainly would remember her writhing on the hood of the car in White
David
Snake's
Coverdale.
Video.
Yeah.
Right. So she was kind of known for that. And played in other things. And, of course, then it was, what, about 15, 20 years later when she was on VH1's Surreal Life in a basic drug addict train wreck, like so many others that end up on that show. But she was definitely a symbol of the 80s at the time, and certainly if you love redheads, you'll definitely appreciate her because she's absolutely a very attractive woman. But I will have to say that I really do like this movie a lot. I think the acting is a little bit over the top at times, but this one is directed by... Kevin Tenney, and I will have to tell you that Kevin Tenney, who we'll be discussing in our next film, a lot of people probably haven't heard of Kevin Tenney, but I'm going to tell you that I really believe he is the premier director of 80s supernatural horror. Wouldn't you agree with that?
No, it would have to be. After this movie, are you kidding me? I mean, and his brother wrote one of the best songs in horror, Bump in the Night,
yes,
which is on the soundtrack for this movie.
Yeah, Dennis Michael Tenney is the composer for this movie, as well as the next one that we'll be talking about. And he really is great. I think the two men put together really defined that whole 80s subgenre. And I certainly think they deserve a little bit more credit than they've gotten, don't you?
Well, you know, the movie shows a lot of potential when you're watching it. And as you go through the movie... as much as it is timepiece, it's really enjoyable to see how the characters progress. I mean, you've got Linda being basically possessed throughout the movie by this Ouija board. She's in the hospital, you know, and then at the end of the movie, you know, you've got folks being killed left and right around her, including, you know, at the end she seems possessed. And is going after her boyfriend who tries to kill himself, if you remember that. She goes after the investigator. He gets involved. It's really a kind of a twist ending. It's trifling, but at the same time, it's a classic 80s thriller, I would say.
I think it actually holds the test of time. The last one that we saw, definitely more of a time capsule. This one, not as bad. It's 80s, but it actually... stands the test of time, and I think it's still good now. So I would definitely recommend this film, whether you're doing a terror on tequila or not. It's fun, but yeah, it's a pretty good movie all around. I have to say that this of the three movies that we're doing tonight, let me just go on record as saying this one's my favorite, and I absolutely will recommend this to somebody who maybe wasn't quite familiar with the whole 80s, but this one's worth seeing, and definitely the best movie that I've seen featuring a Ouija board, which I'm really kind of surprised we haven't seen in more films. Now, this one actually spawned two sequels, which were pretty
horrible.
Are
you kidding me?
They did. Witchboard 2 is really hard to find. Yeah, Witchboard 2 is very hard to find.
You cannot be serious.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. And Witchboard 2, very hard to find, and probably one that is better off left being hard to find. Witchboard 3, kind of just a little bit different, deals with a male character that kind of finds this old guy that has a Ouija board that helps him figure out what stocks to invest in.
And no.
But this one's the fun one. The other two are just, you know, crapola. That's why, you know, Jason was shocked when they had sequels, because we really didn't pay any attention to
those. I had no idea.
Yeah, this one is pretty much a standalone, so don't worry about the sequels. Just watch this one. You know, if you do see it, remember that you heard about it here first on Terror on Tequila. Well, we started off our show with an 80s party, and we'll conclude with yet another. It's 1988's Night of the Demons, and Jason will now give you a formal invite to all the festivities.
Dave, you and every one of our listeners are invited to the big Halloween party at the local mortuary, Hull House. The event is hosted by a local outcast named Angela, who proves she's not only great at spotting a locale, but also at handling a crisis. When the radio burns out and robs partygoers of their music, she decides to offer them a party game seance instead. The clueless teens inadvertently conjure up a demon who turns their event into a dead man's party. Now, Dave, who could ask for more? everybody. We are back, and we are watching Night of the Demons, 1988, directed by Kevin Tenney. And we are on the road to reviewing this movie that is a classic from the 1980s that involves demonic possession and all sorts of grisly matter. What do you think, Dave?
I think this is another good one. It's directed, of course, like you said, by Kevin Tenney, who directed the last film we talked about, Witchboard.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit, give us kind of a little bit more of a rundown than we got in our synopsis here.
Well,
how does it start out?
Night of the Demons is a movie about Halloween night that we all love. It's about a bunch of teenagers that are gathered together at a Halloween party at a mortuary called a Hull House, and that is out and about away from the city. And the beginning of the movie starts with a bunch of kids that are racing through town. Other people are gathering together, getting ready to avoid the school dance and go to this Halloween party. Little do they know that Angela, the creepy, I guess, goth girl.
Let's
of
just
the
say
80s.
She's not attractive, whether she's possessed or not.
She's like all
she's scary looking
black.
Either way. Yeah,
she's organizing this party and has invited some select couples to the party out at this mortuary way off out in the boonies. And all these kids are driving in their costumes, ready to go to this party. Some of them meet along with an old man on the street who they are harassing. He appears to be very innocent. However, he seems to be ready to cause a little mischief himself.
And I'm not sure how he's... I never seen anybody age like that old man. Have you ever seen wrinkles quite like the one featured in the old man in this movie? I don't know.
Yeah, he's definitely a caricature of an old man. However, he is ready to do some damage himself. It looks like he's got some apples and some razor blades all bought up in his grocery bag. He is knocked down by one of the kids, and that reveals his secret. So he's on his way, but so are the kids, and they're all dressed up and ready to go. There is an innocent girl and her boyfriend, I think it's Judy and Jay, that are headed out in their car going to the party. And Angela and her girlfriend, Suzanne, played by...
Linnea Quigley, the big scream queen of the 1980s.
Yeah, they're gonna invite all these kids out to their party and cause a little mischief themselves. So... all the kids end up meeting at this big mortuary out in the boonies, and they are about to have the Halloween night of their lives.
Yeah, and like the other two movies, we're dealing with a mismatch party. None of these people really look like they would hang out with each other normally, but they are all coming together for this party. But yes, as mentioned earlier, we have Linnea Quigley, who plays Suzanne, and gives us her famous bending over scene at the convenience store, which she later reprises for the 2009 remake of this film, though not quite with the same effect as it was quite a few years later. But yeah, they all get together for this mortuary, and we have to hand it to Angela, because even though they are dealing with a boombox as the source of their entertainment, when the boombox goes, they decide to come up with their own form of entertainment in the form of a...
seance.
Yes, and what a seance it was. Basically just a bunch of kids sitting around looking at a mirror saying, stare at the mirror and turn until it turns black. So I'm not sure how involved it is to call demons, but according to this movie, all you have to do is sit in a group and stare at the mirror, because that's what sets the whole thing off.
Well, the mirror ends up shattering into a million pieces, and then Angela seems to go into a trance. And while the couples separate off into their little groups and go off trying to have sex with each other, Angela seems to be possessed and start wreaking havoc individually.
Yes, and I will give this film props. This is the 80s, so we're dealing with old school monster effects. So all the makeup is more the latex variety rather than the CGI variety that we see later, and certainly in the remake. So I will give it credit for that. But the film itself, the characters are fun in a funny sort of way. Tell us about that. What do you think about the tone
of
this film?
There's a guy named Stooge on there who's blatantly...
He's a Stooge.
Oh, my God. This guy is vulgar. From the beginning of the movie, I mean, one of the girls, her little boy brother, is very vulgar. The mother is handing out little turd-like cat turds to eat and fudge.
That is exactly what they look like.
I mean, they look like, yeah. I mean, it's just at every point in this movie, you are laughing. It is after Freddy Krueger. It is when horror took a turn for comedy.
This movie is filled with comedic lines left and right. Everything is to be laughed at. Even the killing scenes are hysterical. However, you get into the point where the lighting, the atmosphere is you know, pretty revealing. It's beyond being scary. I wouldn't say this movie is scary to people like us. However, it's full of blood and guts. And I think that if you're into that kind of horror, you'll be impressed by this movie because a lot of the killing scenes are very good and there is a little bit of tension. However, it's a lot of comedy throughout to lighten it up.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's probably why back in the day when it came out and I saw it, I didn't see it at the theater, but I did see it when it came out on VHS. I wasn't a huge fan of this. I think back then I preferred my horror to be much more serious. But now, looking back and with my eyes filled with 80s nostalgia, I will say that I appreciate the film much more now than I did back then. I think it's entertaining. It definitely keeps you going throughout the film, and the characters are definitely over the top. Like you were saying, you know, they're named Stooge, and they definitely act like Stooges. But
there's some great over-the-top gore in here, too. I mean, you've got some unusual scenes. I mean, with Suzanne with the lipstick, with the nipple. You've got a little bit of unusual visuals there. However, the characters are just completely over-the-top. The overacting is incredible. It's very, very it's light for horror. However, this is one of the greats when it comes to the imagery and the uniqueness of the story. But definitely one of those movies where you are taken away with a good feeling. I think that it's a light horror movie that everyone should see at least once and decide for themselves whether they like it or not, because it spawned a few sequels.
Yeah, it did, actually, two sequels. But getting back to Linnea Quigley's lipstick nipples,
yeah,
she actually ended up marrying the guy that made her prosthetic breasts for this film.
Ah,
that's how they met. Are,
yeah,
what
right.
a way to meet somebody.
She draws very well.
She does. So, and I actually did get to meet Linnea Quigley. This was going back into 2011's July, Days of the Dead in Indianapolis. It was pretty funny because I went up to her and she basically, I came up to her the whole weekend. I was with another person there named Count Gregula who wanted to interview her, and she kept putting it off. Finally, on that Sunday, she's like, okay, no problem. So we went up to her booth and she basically said to us, you know what, would you guys just sit here and watch my booth a minute? I got to run to the bathroom. Well, she disappeared about 45 minutes going off to talk to people. So it was very interesting that Linnea Quigley basically treated me the same way that she would have back in the 80s had I known her in high school. But yeah, she ended up coming back. We did get to interview her. Unfortunately, that video footage, I think Count Gregula lost. It's pretty much gone. So, you know, you'll probably have more chance of seeing Jimmy Hoffa than that footage. But she was actually a lot of fun to talk to. Has she retained her sexuality? I'll just quote my co-blogger, David Alba, who states that she looks like she hit a wall. And that's basically how he put it, and I think that's how I would put it too. But back here in Night of the Demons, she is in her youthful splendor.
Yeah, her zenith.
Her zenith, and not afraid to bend over and pull off her blouse.
Yes, and this is a very dated movie as well. So those of you who are the age of the 80s would love to see some of the stuff that these people are wearing and to recognize that this was a movie from another era. And it's got lots of great music throughout. It's got lots of great rock and some crappy rock as well. Also written by the brother of the director, I suppose. So,
yeah, Dennis Michael Tenney.
Yeah, yeah. Same guy who wrote for Witchboard.
Witchboard, yeah, it's the same duo.
Yeah, some good 80s rock to thrill you all. But this is definitely worth seeing if you've never seen it. Night of the Demons is one of those movies where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe what I'm watching. You're laughing halfway, you're holding your head the other way, and there's a lot of good stuff. Everybody gets a little action in this movie.
Yeah, and the ending is actually even as much fun as the movie itself.
Yeah.
Where we go back to that old man that you mentioned before.
Yes.
Who basically gets his comeuppance.
Yes.
For his diabolical Halloween plans.
You gotta love that. And his lovely wife is there to see the whole thing. And that's really funny stuff for you all. Because in the age of Freddy Krueger movies, this movie stands out, I think, as a unique horror tribute at the time, and Angela certainly was a creepy host.
Well, the party's over for Angela and her friends, as well as for Terror on Tequila. We hope you all enjoyed our tribute to the big supernatural 80s. And while many of those films are harder to figure out than a proverbial Rubik's Cube, they're still definitely worth checking out. We featured some of the rare ones tonight, but other great examples of 80s supernatural horror include The Evil Dead, The Changeling, House, and Poltergeist, perhaps to be covered in a future show. If you're interested in seeking out more titles, you'll have to rely primarily on online sources, though the recent book, Horror, 333 Films to Scare You to Death, written by James Marriott and Kim Newman, does give brief mention to the film Witchboard, as well as a few others. This book was a gift to me from the other Terror Dave, David Alba, and worth checking out. Also worth checking out are two brothers up in Wisconsin who run their own podcast called Brain Says Strange Things. You can find the horror dishing of Patrick and Jordan Markfort by going on to YouTube. Jason, does your brain say strange things?
Dude, I get totally tubular on some tequila.
To the max.
And this concludes our awesome 80s show. Please join us again for another night of grisly terror and heavy drinking. This is Jason Lucas and Dave Fuentes from WTOT Terror on Tequila saying goodnight, and remember, it's better to taste it than waste it.
To Terror on Tequila.